Oh, you got to check this out. The Spoils of Babylon, Eric John Rosch's epic novel, is now an epic miniseries coming to IFC Thursday, January 9th. Listen to these names. It's a six-part miniseries, by the way. Features Kristen Wiig, Tobey Maguire, Will Ferrell. Yeah, I've heard of that dude. Jessica Alba, Val Kilmer, Haley Joel Osment, Tim Robbins, Michael Sheen, and more. The premiere night will include two back-to-back episodes. The Spoils of Babylon, IFC, Thursday, January 9th at 10, 9 Central. Do not miss this television event. Hope you're enjoying the holidays. I know I am. Thank you so much for sharing the good news with everyone and really telling people about the show. We count on you. We count on you going through Amazon and going through AdamCarolla.com. We count on you taking in a little Mangria, especially around the holidays. And we count on you enjoying the great Jimmy Kimmel.
This is Carolla Digital. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Jimmy Kimmel, plus Allison Rosen on news, and Bob Bryan on sound effects. And now, he's Bert to Jimmy's Ernie, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Welcome to the program. It's good day, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
Good day, Bald Brian.
Hey, hey, hey.
And good day, Jimmy Kimmel.
Hey, 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 you. What's happening?
I'm excited that Jimmy's in studio. I was really thinking about, like yesterday and today, I thought, like, this is on the heels of my hard-hitting interview with Mike Tyson, where people are like, hey, that was a good interview. Like, I didn't make any jokes. I just was straight. I was trying to, like, get to the bottom of a few things, and people seemed to dig it. And I thought, I think I'd like to do that with Jimmy.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I think – I always think people want to – and especially now, like, now with the 11:35 time slot, Rolling Stone cover, and Emmys, and White House Correspondents' Dinner, and all that. It's been a crazy year for you.
Yeah.
I know, one thing.
You know, it'll just immediately devolve into stories about us farting on each other, though, right? I mean.
But this time he'll get to the bottom of them.
I'll get to the bottom of the fart stories.
Oh, what I ate?
I was thinking about one time we were interviewed on set at the Man Show, I believe. And somebody said, did you ever think you would be in this position? And I said, oh, no, no. I was like on a roof in Van Nuys scraping tar. I had no idea I would get here. And Jimmy said, I'm surprised it took so long. And I started laughing, and then I realized, oh, no, he's serious about that answer. Like, and that was at 29. Like, it was like took way too long to get to this position in life. So there's a part of me that goes, wow, this is unbelievable. Like, you know, almost, you know, starting at shortstop for the Yankees, the 11:35 position, and dominating the ratings, or at least trading punches with the big boys in the center of the ring. And then there's a part of me that realizes Jimmy probably always thought you would be here at some, or at least felt you could be here on some level.
Well, not here. I'd never anticipated that I'd have a network talk show, but I figured that you and I would have a show together, and I thought that it took a longer time than it should have for that to happen at that time.
But
I mean, do you remember when we tried to do an afternoon radio show on the FM talk station in town that was owned by our own company?
Yes.
They told us no. And then
well, what happened was
I stand by that position.
They came to me and said, I want you to do some kind of show. Yeah. And I said, me and my buddy Jimmy. And yeah. They said, he's more of a behind-the-scenes guy. Like, he's a producer, not an on-air talent. And I said, let's put us both together and do a show. And then they were like, thanks, but no thanks.
At the time, I was on a television show, too. Maybe they were unaware of it. I don't know what the decision-making was there. I think maybe they didn't want to move me from the Kevin and Bean show. It's the only thing I could think of that makes sense.
To be fair to them, if you said to them, how about you eat a peanut butter and banana sandwich while I blow you, if it was your idea, they'd say no.
Yeah, right.
They could have been in the mood for a blowjob and a peanut butter and banana sandwich, but if you came up to them and go, I got an idea for you, boss, they'd go, not so fast. They're very Arab in that particular fashion.
Yeah, some of them were. Yeah,
some of them were. So the idea, I think, that I said, how about me and Jimmy do it, whatever, they're like, slow down, champ. And then they gave me a reason why. But they wouldn't put us together. But Jimmy obviously grew up being a Letterman and crazed Letterman fan. Pictures of you with the Letterman late night cake and the Letterman jacket and all that stuff at 14, 15, 16 years of age. I think the vanity license plate.
Yeah, it said late night on it.
Right. So there's signs early on, much like a young boy torturing animals, where you know he's going to be a serial killer at some point, except for worse, in this case, late night host. But there's signs that obviously you're interested in, but did that every boy grows up thinking, I'm going to play in the NFL or I'm going to play for the Dodgers. But at some point, the dream is dashed. Did you ever have a point where your dream was dashed?
Every single radio job I ever worked at the end of it when they fired me, they dashed my dream. My first paying radio job was in Seattle. I worked there for 10 months. They fired me, and we didn't get another job for a year. It was, you know, I figured, oh, that was it.
Did they tell you why?
Why they fired us? They didn't have to. I kind of knew why. I mean, they didn't give a reason why they fired us. They just said it wasn't working.
Showbiz is a weird business in that when you watch the NFL playoffs, with rare exception, or any sport, basketball, baseball, the guys you see starting were the stars of their football team in high school. And not only were they stars, but all the guys who were playing cornerback played quarterback and DB and return punts and were all
The stars of their basketball and baseball teams.
So you go, okay, so at this level, at the high school level, these guys are superstars. And then maybe if they get to the show, maybe they'll start. Showbiz is a weird thing where guys like Jimmy Kimmel, who are stars in the big leagues, can sit on the bench of their high school team. And there's a million stories that way. I mean, you got fired from how many radio jobs? And we're not talking about New York City.
No.
We're talking about Orlando,
Tucson,
and
Arizona,
Palm Springs,
Tampa,
Seattle.
Yeah, Palm Springs, I didn't get fired, but I got fired from my college radio station. I wasn't even being paid. I got fired a whole bunch of times, a lot of times.
Right, so it's a sort of a math that you do where you go, well, if the guy's not cutting it at the high school level, if he can't compete on the basketball court or the football field at the high school level, what are the chances he's ever going to go to the pros? And showbiz is one of the few things where that does happen. People pull you aside and tell you can't do it, or they fire you. So you get into radio, and how do you get into radio to begin with?
I worked at Miller's Outpost, which is a regional clothing
oh,
store.
Oh, that story.
I miss those gay cowboys.
West Coast, yeah. Homer and JR.
That's right.
And I was a cashier there, and there was a guy who worked there who worked on the college radio station, and he said, you know what? You're funny. You should be on the radio. And I thought, well, that would be fun. And so I went down there and they hired me. And in fact, the guy who's in the Crystal Method was my program director, a guy named Ken Jordan.
I saw Ken in the airport in Vegas a week ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah.
One of those things.
He fired me.
I know. But I don't hold that against him.
I don't either.
I like him, and it's one of those things where when you pass and you should talk more, but you can't, but you don't know what to do, but you're in the airplane. Like, Ken, hey, ho, hey, hey, ho. Okay, I got to get to the car. Like you don't know.
One of the best ways to run into someone.
You should have coffee, but you're not. You're walking different directions at the airport, but he gives his love. So Ken worked at the Miller South?
Yeah, he was the program director. I mean, he was a kid too. You know,
right.
I was 16. He was like 19 or something
right, like
that. And he hired me. I did like a Sunday night talk show where I'd interview local. I'd go through the phone book and find like the hairstylist of the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd interview him for a half hour, asking him which stars he'd style. Of course, he hadn't styled any stars' hair. John
right.
Davison, I think, was the one star who's.
But I feel like that's like styling three stars' heads of hair.
Because he had a big white patch in the middle of
and he had that big swoopy thing going on in the front.
Don't get me wrong. He did a great job with John.
Fantastic.
And I did that, and then I started doing characters on a local radio station in Las Vegas, and then I started doing characters when I went to college at Arizona State on a local radio station there, and one of the guys there took me to Seattle with him when he got a job in Seattle, a guy named Kent Voss.
Sure, you know, Kent.
And,
sure.
And he hired me to be his sidekick. When I got there, they had no idea who I was, what I was doing there. They told me I was going to make $30,000 a year. When I got my paycheck, it was $20,000 a year. It was a bad experience overall.
A lot of suspicion in radio in terms of guilty until proven innocent, because everyone wants to get on the radio, but no one really is any good. And thus, a lot of skepticism when you try to do it. But so you're now doing – you're with Kent Voss. You're in Seattle. You're doing mornings with Kent.
Right.
And what's the living situation? What's
living
going on?
With Kent and married at the time. So my ex-wife Gina, Kent, and I, the reason we lived together is because I was making less money than I. So I rented a house thinking I was making $30,000, mm-hmm. and then found out I was making $20,000, and so Kent had to stay with us. Mm-hmm. So we lived together, and Kent and his dog Zeb, who was half pit bull, half poodle.
Wow. And
a rape dog.
And. Have you had your kids yet? What
no.
You got married really?
I got married when I was 20. I had Katie when I was 24.
Oh, okay. So you're still a little ways off of kids.
Yes.
So now how long do you do radio in Seattle before you're asked to leave?
10 months.
Not even a year.
Not even a year.
Did they give the reason?
They just said it wasn't working out. You know, they never really. That is the reason. Really, I mean, it wasn't like. I mean, I was always on time. I never missed a day of work. I mean, especially when you look at all of those things, you know, I worked very hard. I was, you know, always there.
It's a weird – Jimmy's a weird guy to fire because radio and entertainment in general is filled with flakes and drug addicts and people that just overslept and whatever.
Well, more so in radio.
More so in radio. But Jimmy – and there's two reasons you fire a guy. A, he's not funny, or B, you just can't deal with the guy such a flake. He's missed 3 days in a row and whatever. Jimmy was, you know, we'd come in the mornings at K-Rock. He'd come in at 4 a.m. He'd be editing my bits with a razor blade and putting the stuff, like putting the tape down on a stein, taping it together and stuff. Like, I don't ever remember you being late or no. even close to tardy or
every once
leaving
in a while it's
early.
A little late, but yeah, I took it pretty seriously.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had a crazy work ethic. So, I mean, to fire you, it wouldn't be because you were late or for drugs or for banging the boss's wife or, like, you just have to – they'd have to just think you sucked artistically.
Yeah. Well, I also used to have fun in the office. You know, there was in my first job in Seattle, there was a company newsletter that went around, and I would make the cover for that newsletter, and I, you know – take nude men and I'd put the general manager's head on the nude men and have people blowing each other and that kind of thing. And I always thought it was funny. And everyone at the station thought it was funny, except for the guy who was blowing the other guy on the newsletter.
Right.
He never thought it was funny. And eventually there'd be enough kind of bad blood that when it came time to either give me the benefit of the doubt or not give me the benefit of the doubt, they didn't give me the benefit of the doubt.
I always wonder though, when I met Jimmy, I locked on to Jimmy, but I grabbed on to Jimmy like you were just floating out in the open sea and a styrofoam cooler came wandering by and you just grabbed it with both hands. Like, that's the way I grabbed on to Jimmy. I thought Jimmy was funny, and Jimmy thought I was funny, and it was easy for us to understand. Like, oh, hey, this guy's sharp. This guy's funny. I don't understand why the business, even if you're not funny, as a general manager, program director, or whatever, you don't go, this guy's funny. Like, don't you think you would recognize a young David Letterman or fill in the blank like Howard Stern? Like, why don't they recognize the young version?
You should meet these guys. I mean, if you met them, you would know. I mean, I'd say it's probably radio is just above mime, I guess, or, you know, performing out on the street for nickels at the farmer's market. I think that the radio industry is just above that. So you're talking about guys who, for the most part, grew up in the market. They have, like, they're lifers at the radio station. They want to be on that radio station forever. And if you cause any kind of trouble at all, they want no part of it. Even though when they hire you, they say, we want to cause trouble. We want to be edgy. We want to do things. And they don't. They don't. They're lying when they say those things. And I, of course, would believe them when they'd say those things and go, great. Well, I'm the perfect person for you. I'm going to cause trouble. You're going to get phone calls.
Paul Bryan, yes.
What do you think? Is there a industry that seems more glamorous that is actually less glamorous than being on the radio?
Oh.
Maybe limo porn? Driver?
Porn.
Yeah, I'd say porn.
Yeah.
Although I think we've, pardon the pun, blown the lid off of the porn industry. It used to seem, kind of groovy
pharmacist.
In the 70s.
How about pharmacist?
Yes. Yeah.
You go to college for 8 years to work in the back of a supermarket, essentially.
Right.
But you get to look down at everyone.
Yeah, you do get to stand up on that riser. So now you go from Seattle to where? And at what
home,
point?
Back home to my parents' house in Arizona.
With your wife?
With my wife, 26-foot moving truck, Pontiac Grand Am attached to the back of it.
Right. And you go, you move back home to your parents in Arizona, yeah. And you're living at home with your wife, which not living the dream. So
not ideal. Valet parking. In fact, I was valet parking at a local boxing club / nightclub / male strip club. Mm-hmm. One night a week it was a male strip club. And Danny Bonaducci used to come to this nightclub, not when it was a male strip club, but I used to park his car.
Right.
And he was on the radio in Phoenix at the time. But that was a bad time for me. I wrecked a truck that had dualies on it, which I still don't understand how a car could be wider in the back than it is in the front.
I have one. Yes, dual wheels in the back, the rear axle
big
and
hips.
Tires go bubbling way out, and it's easy to scrape.
$500. That is the greatest story I have ever heard.
$500 deductible I had to pay. That was like 7.5 nights' work.
Right, right. Yeah. So now you're working, you're parking cars, you are living back home, you're married and living at home.
And sending out tapes.
And sending out tapes from radio days, or are you making these tapes?
From radio days, sending demo tapes from our time in Seattle. And just we'd get Radio and Records, this trade paper, every Thursday. And I'd be out waiting by the mailbox. And if it was a day late, it was heartbreaking.
Right.
But every Thursday, I'd be there. I'd go through the want ads, look at every – I'd send a tape to everyone that was looking for a morning show. And almost no one ever responded, because that's the thing about radio. They will never listen to your tapes.
Right.
I mean, they just won't do it.
Well, you're almost guilty by virtue of being the person who handed the tape in or sent the tape in. You know what I mean? Like, if you're the person that slides the tape under the door and says, give it a listen, they're not going to listen because you're unemployed and sending a tape to them.
Yeah.
They want to discover people.
Or know about somebody
or
already.
Hear some buzz about somebody. Because I used to remember sitting in Kevin Weatherly's office. He'd always have a pile of tapes that people sent in. And there's no intention. But now you're in a position where you get piles of shit sent to you.
Right. And I don't listen to
them. And you don't listen to them. I know. That's the point.
But I am not putting out an ad saying, send me your tapes.
Right. That's a good point.
You know, they're sending them unsolicited.
Right. So you would send – you got nothing. So then how does the next gig come about?
We'd get excited if we even got a rejection letter. It said, like, we enjoyed your tape. Unfortunately, we hired somebody else. We considered that a small victory.
Sure.
So then I got two jobs in the same week after 9 months of unemployment, although I was working as a valet parker.
Were Joan and Jim your parents trying to
– They were my parents at the time,
At the time. Yes. And they're trying to talk you in – are they trying to talk you toward college?
My dad hated this radio plan. Yeah. He hated it. He tried to bribe me to stay home, to just stay and go to college and mm-hmm. live there. But I was dead set on it, and there was no talking to me about it.
Right.
So I got a job in Charleston, West Virginia, doing mornings and with my partner, Kent. And at the same time, Kent got a job in Tampa, Florida at a big radio station there. And he was going to try to get me in as the producer of the show. But there was no guarantee. So Kent passed on the West Virginia job, and they wanted to give it to me. So I'd come do the show. But I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know how to run the board. I was, you know, I had no idea what I was doing when it came to the mechanics of a show. And I was scared of West Virginia in general.
Sure.
So I initially accepted that job. And then the next day I called the guy and I said, I just can't do it. And I went to Tampa and I worked in Tampa as the morning show producer. And I did characters on air. And I worked with this guy, Mike Elliott and Kent Voss. And we got fired in 11 months at that job.
Wow. So you bested your previous record by a month.
On that day that I got fired, I got offered a job in Palm Springs to be the morning guy. And Palm Springs is a very small market. So luckily, I got my 2 week severance, or else I wouldn't have been able to afford to move. I moved with that money to California, to Palm Springs, and I worked there for a year and a half. I did not get fired at that job. Carson Daly was my intern at that job, and he took over when I left. I went to another radio station in Tucson and got fired there in another 10 months, I think.
Wow. He never made it a year at any of these places. Except
for Palm Springs.
How did your wife feel about all the moving around?
We didn't talk much. No, she wasn't crazy about it. But I had, in fairness, I'd explained that this was probably what was going to happen. Although I didn't believe that it was what was, I figured, oh, somebody's going to like me at one of these places. But it's an itinerant type of job, radio. You move around, and once you get fired in one market, it's pretty rare that you get picked up at another station there.
It's also one of those gigs where you either go 10 months or 200 years. There's not a lot of in-between numbers. Either this guy's going on his 35th year on the air or boom.
Or you're a legend in the market. And
right.
Have like one thing you say like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Everybody knows
I
you.
Had one of those. So you go then. Now, when do you get to K-Rock? In Los Angeles.
January of 1994, just after the earthquake, which is great timing because there was no place to rent. Everything was rented.
Right.
That was when I got fired in Tucson. I got the job at K-Rock right away. In fact, I actually didn't have the job at K-Rock. They'd indicated they were going to give me the job but never really pulled the trigger for a period of 3 months. So I just decided to move to L.A. and show up. And I moved to L.A., and I remember my first day on the air, I showed up at the studio, and Kevin and Bean are the morning guys there, and they looked at me, and they said, they hired you? And I thought, oh, no, this is bad. But I did not get fired from that radius. I worked there for 5 years.
I'm trying to figure out a couple of the things. Like sometimes people say, well, how'd you get on the radio? I said, well, I was Jimmy's boxing trainer, and then he just told me to call in. But I want to fact check some of this stuff
okay.
with you, because I remember having a conversation with you where you said to me, what do you do? And I said, I shoot the shit. Like, I roll with the punches.
Right.
I just get in there and I mix it up and I just tell jokes. And he said, Jimmy said, well, you can't do that. And I said, why not? And he said, well, that's what Kevin and Bean do. You got to come up with a character. And I said, I don't really do characters. And he said, well, you want to get on the radio, you got to do a character. That part's right.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. Yeah.
But the part
that's what everyone says, by the way, when they want to get on the radio, they want to just be in there talking. And
right. Yeah. But they're not them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel or maybe Adam Carolla can come in and sit down and start talking now. But back then, who cares? But the question is, you told me, look, just call in Monday morning as your character, and I'm not going to really prep the guys. I'm just going to tell them you're calling in. I'm not going to tell them you're the boxing coach calling in.
No, no.
How did that work?
When we're doing the boxing thing, I think at that time they were interested in talking to you because
right, because I was training you.
And then they thought you were funny when and then I explained that you were going to be doing a shop teacher character on the show, and they didn't like Kevin and Bean. You can't pitch any idea to them. I mean, they don't like any idea you pitch to them. But I got to the point where I just bullied them. I said, listen, just try it. You know, they didn't want to let me on the air when I was working there. And I had to really like convince them to give me a try. And only because it went well that first time did they continue to put me on the air. And same thing with Adam. He killed the first time he was on the air. They didn't understand this idea of, I said, he's going to play a woodshop teacher. He's going to be giving – he's calling in sick and he's going to give a message to his students. And that was your idea. You know? And they didn't understand why we would do that. But it was – they loved it when you did it, and it was instantly very popular.
I remember – and I tell people all the time, you don't have to be good all of the time. You just have to kind of pick your moments.
Yeah, you just
football,
can't. It's just not that easy. Yeah.
And not only that, but – I mean, it's great to be great all the time, but Tom Brady can throw three picks in the middle of the season. He just can't do it in the playoffs, or he can't do it in the Super Bowl. Like, there's little moments, and people sort of remember. They don't give a shit about any three-pick games in the middle of the season at almost any given time, but they will recall, and they do pay attention to these little moments. It's kind of like dates, you know? You have to – the first one's got to be good, and the second one's got to be good, and the 11th one you can – you can fart, cup it, throw it toward your face two times, and you'll probably get to a 12th date. But you can't do that on the first date. So it's not – I was very concerned. Like, I got to be good for the first 10 times. That was my thought. Because I knew, and you tell me if I'm wrong, if you ever turned in a stinker and you'd only had two good ones under your belt, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, I don't know about next week."
Oh yeah, two bad ones in a row and forget about it. You're off. Yeah, that's
right.
I mean, that's how they are. That's how they always were. Yeah,
and that's kind of how a lot of people are. I mean, that's kind of how you are with TV shows. Like, you can do three bad episodes, but you can't do them in a row.
Right.
If you're, whether it's Lost or Jimmy Kimmel Live, if you're a big fan and you see three in a row that stink, you might not get to the fourth. You can spread three shitty ones out over a season.
Yeah.
You just have to put a little padding in between.
I'd love to hear that 11th Bertram bit. Bertram raps.
The first, like, 80 were good. I mean, it really it was – and we worked hard on those bits. They weren't – it wasn't just – you know, that was something that we really, like, planned out, thought about, because for Adam, it was important to be funny, and I wanted Adam to be funny because I wanted them to keep him on the show, and I also – wanted to be right. You know, I wanted, because I told them, oh, this guy's great, he's going to be funny, and, you know, I wanted to be right.
I'm trying to think of the name, but the point is this is why it bothers me when people with opportunities are lazy. Like, it's all right to be lazy once you're an established artist, and once you're Mariah Carey, you can show up late. But those sort of moments in the beginning where people are lazy. It's funny, all this sort of pre-internet business. I remember when I was writing a Bertram bit, and I would write them the night before, and then because I didn't read well at all, even stuff I wrote, I'd write it all out, then I'd read it out loud like five times because I couldn't get through my own stuff, and I'd write stuff in big block print and underline stuff. And I remember I wanted to come up with cookies, like a specific cookie that ended up getting shoved up my ass somehow in this Bertram bit. It was pretty highbrow stuff. It was like, and I went from my house in La Crescenta up the hill to Foothill Boulevard up to the Vons at like 9:30 at night and went to the cookie section.
I think I was with you. I was going to use that as an example. I've done that many times.
I found pecan sandies. And I thought, that's so much better than just saying chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah.
And I got a box of pecan sandies shoved up my ass. And I thought it was so much more specific. And so I was in, but the point is, I got my car at 9:30 at night and drove up to the store. There's no, you know, there's no funny cookie name Google search back then. And I went up and I wrote it. And I thought, oh, this is good. And I'm trying to think, like,
I did that today. I went online. I was writing a bit for the show, and I was looking for funny British phrases. And so I just Google searched them, and there's hundreds of them. And I took what I wanted, and I made some up and put them together. And
Good day, sir.
And every time – that's not distracting at all, Brian. And every time –
I said good day.
Jimmy knows radio.
Never mind. Yeah. But anyway, you get the point.
Yeah. It's specific. Funny. But let me ask this then. Is there – and I'm trying to figure this one out because my kids were going to the zoo today. And here's what happens. I try to lay around in my bed and watch my wife and I. We watch Catfish sometimes,
right,
on Sunday morning. People keep retweeting me my synopsis of Catfish, which I now think is funny because people are retweeting it to me. But if you ever watch a show, it's a MTV and they're meeting online, and then the person turns out not to be the person. But the basic synopsis of Catfish is she's my soulmate, man. And then what? She's fat? And then it's like, fuck this. And it's like, guys go from she's my soulmate to fuck this. It's just like, oh, she's 20 pounds heavier than I thought she was. Like, it shows how shallow and fucked up guys are. And they're pissed off, too. But wait, I thought she was your soulmate. And all the talk, whenever they do the pre-interview, it's not like she has such a tight pussy, I'm dying to fuck her. It's always like, she fucking knows what I'm thinking. She's my soulmate. We speak in a language that transcends words. And it's like, what? She's 80 pounds overweight? No fucking way. And then they leave all pissed off. But we lay around and we try to watch Catfish. And my kids run up with their computer and they do their, like, online shopping. They're shopping.
What?
They're not shopping. They're pointing out what they want online. And I keep doing the Christmas and birthdays. Christmas and birthdays. That's when you get presents. That's when we got presents. Christmas and birthdays. You don't get shit all year round. And then at some point, they announced that they're going to the zoo. And as soon as they found out they were going to the Santa Barbara Zoo, they started planning on what they were going to buy at the zoo. And I'm like, you don't buy stuff at the zoo. You go to the zoo. You look at animals, but you don't go there in a shopping spree. And then I realized their pleasure centers are fried. They're just burnt out. There's like too much. They can't compute. It's like too much coming in. So the question for you, Jimmy, is back in the day, when you used to really like craft those bits, like back in the K-Rock days, we would do them, you would do them, I would do them, you would edit them, and we would voice them, and you would get people in. And it really, there was no, you'd have to take the proverbial trip to the supermarket and find pecan sandies, write it down, and come back home again. You could not Google it. Even though it was wildly time consuming, was it more satisfying on some level?
No, I don't think so.
No, you're right. That's bullshit.
Yeah,
that's
every time I Google something, I think, oh, this is the greatest. I don't have to go through this nonsense racking my brain trying to think of Roger Moore movies or, you know, whatever it may be. You know?
Right.
I just go right on IMDb and figure it out.
Don't you? And I do. It is like it's a great convenience. But on the other hand, it just gets you to the next thing that much faster.
Yes.
So there's that much more to get to versus when you used to make things out of claymated items, or you'd make things out of figurines out of clay. Like you'd spend the entire day just working on one character.
Yeah. But how about just like driving to the, in my case, Video Time with a Y in my neighborhood in Las Vegas and pretending to be perusing the comedy section while looking for something that had topless girls in it.
Right.
And then putting it on the counter and hoping they're not going to give you a hard time about renting it because you're only 16, and then getting into your car and that drive home.
Sure.
It's very romantic, you know, and then hoping nobody is home so you can use the VCR uninterrupted. I mean, we don't have any of that.
Right.
There's none of that now. In fact, people – I like watching television shows when they air. And, you know, people like to watch a big block of, you know, Breaking Bad or whatever. But there's something nice about just that seeing it and then having to wait a week and having that week in which you talk to people about it. And just that anticipation. It's just we swallow everything up so quickly now that it is nice to have a little of that.
It's basically – I mean – It's basically the essence of foreplay. It's like every guy's impulse is, I want to shove my dick through the mail slot and have someone start sucking on it. Like, I don't even want to go in through the front door. But there's that dick.
Every guy.
Every
especially
human being.
Especially mailmen.
No, what I'm saying is the dinner, the conversation, the cocktails, at some point the petting and the booby squeeze over the sweater and stuff like that.
It's just a waste of my time.
It all leads to a better orgasm. You just don't know it. The women are sort of in control of it. Mm. I just mean when – I always say when The Grinch That Stole Christmas would come on when I was a kid, it was – huge.
And if you missed it, it was devastating.
Remember the special letters that would spin around?
Yes.
That's what started the butterfly.
And it'd be
stomach.
Like you'd be in the kitchen trying to get some popcorn and your sister would start screaming, it's on, it's back on. And you'd go sprinting down the hall and slide in your jammies and stuff. My kids aren't going to give a fuck about The Grinch That Stole Christmas. They will not give a shit. The reason they won't give a shit is it's cock through the mailbox time for them. They can go ahead and watch.
Your children have their dicks in the mailbox.
They have their dicks in the mailbox. Heads in the cloud, like Casey Kasem used to say. Your feet on the ground, heads and stars, cock through the mailbox. I'm Casey Kasem. Thanks for listening. No, but they can watch it whenever they want, and then when they want to pause it, they'll pause it.
Yeah.
They'll walk away. And I find I will go to movies and theaters so that I can enjoy them because we get the screeners and I watch 18 minutes of Lincoln. Then I put it on pause. Then I go in the kitchen to get some mangria. Then I come back in there and I watch another 9 minutes of it. And then I go, what's going on SportsCenter? And then I watch SportsCenter for 10 minutes. And at a certain point, I get to Varsity Blues and I call it a night.
I turn something on, put it on pause, and then check Twitter. And then I never watch
it. You got it. Like, that's why everyone goes, well, why do you want to go to the theater if you can sit at home and watch? I can't sit at home and watch it. I keep, as
too
long
many
as there's the pause.
Yeah.
Right. All right. The great Jimmy Kimmel's here. I should say, by the way, 11:35 ABC. Thank you very much. And what a just amazing, amazing year Jimmy's having. there are times when I stop and think I should just be jealous and or bitter. And I don't know why I'm not, but I really do have such great affection for Jimmy and such great respect. And look at it, the reason Jimmy got me into show business and kept me into show business. And that's why there's nothing you can do that I would never – people ask me once in a while, like, oh, Jimmy's doing all this great stuff, and then what about you? And I just go
– People are assholes. That's
they're
why.
Assholes. Yeah. Yeah, somebody literally interviewed me once verbatim and said, we're doing a story on Dr. Drew. I said, okay, I'll talk to you. He said, he has 3 shows on TV. And I said, yeah. You have none. I said, first off, I'm acutely aware of that, by the way. I'll be the first to know if I have a show on TV and I'll tell you. But thank you for that heads up. Right. You have none. I said, yes, that's true. And she goes, how's it feel? Are you like an 8-year-old with a fucking learning disability who got hold of a telephone? I'm like, what's going on? Like, what do you mean? That's journalism? How does that feel? So, but I see Jim, like when I see Jimmy doing the correspondence dinner, or the Emmys or something, I'm really, part of it is I think, oh, bullet dodge. Like everything to me just sounds like a pain in the ass. Like, oh God, that's so, I know he's pacing right now. He's pacing. But then I see him shaking hands with Barack Obama and everything. And I just think, I just feel happy. I don't have any of that.
We never had that with each other ever.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, there were times when we would walk through airports and, well, the greatest, we'll take a break, but okay. I think we're in Mexico.
Yeah, right.
You know this story?
Oh, of course.
All right, the greatest story ever told. First, go to my PC. That's right. It's horrible winter out there. You can't stop it, baby. It's it's this greenhouse effect that's going on. Yeah. Yeah, but didn't quite get to 80.
You got
high 70s.
You got sun.
That's right.
You
get sunstroke out there. All right.
I love that you've learned to read. This is a triumph over. I mean, first I think
off,
people think that you're kidding when you say that you couldn't read, but you genuinely. I mean, not only couldn't you read, you could not write letters. I mean, it was me. I couldn't read when I read what you wrote.
I learned, like, if first off, it's a very good point, which is. And how dare you accuse me of reading that copy?
It was from the heart.
From the fucking heart. Yeah. I speak from the gut when I talk to you. What is that? Go to my PC. When I met Jimmy, I had successfully navigated a life of 30 years without having to read. And once you hit 30 and you haven't started to read, I don't know, it's like playing jazz flute or something. Like, really going to pick it up at this stage in life? Like, if you've never touched it before this? I was doing construction and teaching boxing.
Were you open about the fact that you couldn't read at the time? Or would you come up with ways to hide it like Tootie's boyfriend did on Facts of Life?
That's the reference that they most often used when they made fun of
well,
me, number one.
The guys that Adam was associating with.
I would have been
with...
made fun of for knowing how to read on the job site or in the gym.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have been a liability.
I didn't want to take a verbal pounding for knowing how to read.
Oh, look at Shakespeare over here with his words.
Those are letters.
So I didn't really know how to read. I couldn't spell. I couldn't write. And it was fine because I was teaching boxing and I was swinging a hammer and it just never came up. And then especially, it's like a fat guy not playing softball. You can avoid it. Like, if you're just no good at softball, there are plenty of ways just to not do it.
Reading probably pops up more frequently in everyday life than softball.
A little more for some, but not. So I hung out with dudes who didn't read, and I didn't read, and I didn't give a shit. And then what happened is all of a sudden I met Jimmy, and I got into radio, and there was bits and copy and stuff. Nice. And it was just
letters.
Just a jumble of words. And not only did I not really know how to read, but it was such a huge emotional roadblock for me because then it's like now reading on television is like standing in front of the chalkboard times a million. And my knees would have been buckling standing in front of 28 kids trying to write something. I remember once I was in the sixth grade, they told me to go to the chalkboard and write like the PE schedule or something. And I had to write girls and boys and put like a line down between the middle of it. And I spelt girls with a U, which does make sense. And by the way, not confusing. It's not like boys and girls. Like what? Who? What's that other species? But still, that was it for me. Like all the laughter, the chalk and everything. So when I got hooked up with Jimmy, I had to learn to
spell
read.
Girls.
To spell girls. And it's funny because people are like, well, you're dyslexic. It's always funny. I always say this, which is a white guy who can't read is dyslexic, and a black guy who can't read is like, fell through the crack. System let him down. It's like, why can't the black guy be dyslexic? It's racist saying fell through the cracks. System let him down. I never got the fell through the crack, system let him down. I just got the, well, you must be dyslexic. And I got tested. When you get tested for dyslexia, it's like getting an AIDS test and hoping you're HIV positive. Like, you're like, please let there be some sort of clinical reason for the reason I cannot read the back of the cereal box. And it's like, you're fine. You got, and I'm like, no, I'm not. You don't understand.
So, I think whoever administered that test made a mistake, because it's you see people who are illiterate, but you know, not who have a very high level of intelligence. There must be something. Maybe it's something they haven't discovered yet. Maybe it's something they'll name after you.
That'd be nice.
You did fall through the cracks.
I always wanted a syndrome named after me. I have a meteor, I think, named after me. I'm now, by the way, I'm an official colonel in Kentucky. Oh. And now the syndrome named after me would be official.
A syndrome would be great.
Would be the hat trick.
You don't want a disease, but a syndrome would be nice.
I got a lot of good stuff in the Urban Dictionary, by the way. Mike Lynch just got one. I got Behyman in the Urban Dictionary. We got good lenses, bad frames.
Behyman is a joke that you wrote a long time ago.
I know.
Yeah.
Good lenses, bad frames is, you know, a guy who's actually smart but sort of just looks off, looks dumb. Somehow Dr. Bruce was the inspiration for that.
Hey, you're resveratrol.
Black simile is what I have. Like when you're trying to think, is that the big guy from the Green Mile or the big guy from the black guy from there? Like, I don't know. One of those. One of the big bald black guys. That works.
That's reasonable.
That's reasonable.
What do you want your syndrome to be?
Well, it's got to be something to do.
It'll be whatever Lynette dies of.
That's right. Beaten with an axe handle. Itis. All right. We'll take a quick break. Jimmy Kimmel here. Right back with...
Are you reading what's going on?
The example
here?
Of him not having
He's thinking it's worse.
No, of us always being good with each other's success or lack thereof. That took place at a hot spot in Mexico on spring break.
Right,
I believe
it was. That's
awesome story. After 10 years, was there any? You know, it's so weird because there's this sort of thing with you, which is, I know the first few years were kind of tough and ratings weren't fantastic and so on and so forth, but it was always that, I always had that element or that feeling of, it's Jimmy. It's going to work.
Yeah.
Going to make it work.
Yeah, that was,
like, force
I never
it
had
to work.
That. But yeah, I did force it to work, I guess. I mean, I just really just worked at it as much as I possibly could as far as it being staying on the air.
And yeah, you did
I
what
think
it took.
Once you're there, you're kind of there.
The story you were going to tell about like Senior Frogs, spring break, and all that kind of stuff. Go ahead and tell it if you like.
So we were in Mexico for a bachelor party, and it was a big bunch of us. And I think we went out at like midnight or something. And there were a bunch of girls at the bar, American girls, and they were very excited, very, very excited to see Adam and swarming.
Because I was on MTV.
He's on Love Line on MTV and very, very excited. And, you know, I'm sitting there and probably, I don't know, a dozen girls. One of them looks over at me and she goes, "Oh, my dad watches you."
Yeah.
On Win Ben Stein's Money. It couldn't have been more deflating.
It was out of a movie because it was a cavalcade of, "Hey, I know you from MTV." And then finally one of them went, "Hey, I know you. My dad's a big fan."
And that woman married my cousin Sal. And
oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's
it was Melissa.
Yeah. I always laugh about you being at the hotel and calling everyone as George Wallace and waking them up with your crazy black voice. But George Wallace has a crazy black voice. And I don't know what hotel, and I don't know who you were calling.
It was the Hilton in New York. We were there for the Hugh Hefner roast. It was like 6 days after 9/11. We did the roast. It went well. afterwards, we were hanging out in the hotel room. We'd had a few drinks, and I had the phone list of everyone involved with the production. So I just started at the top, and I called the president of Comedy Central as George Wallace, the comedian, saying, I just want to say I had a great time, and thank you for inviting me, and what a great – oh, okay. Now, people don't know why they're getting calls in the middle of the night. And I went down the list and called every comedian, every executive. I even called the catering director for the hotel and say, you know, the filet mignon, that was delicious, but it's too small. I'm a big man, and I called Dick Capri, who was this old comic.
And nobody really has the balls to go, this is not George Wallace. Because no one knows exactly what he sounds like, and he does sound like a cartoon character of a large black man in a Kango hat.
Well, a lot of people thought it was George Wallace.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I was just telling the story the other day. Remember when you called the John and Jeff show as your black man?
Yeah, right.
And they asked you, they kept going, you're not black. And you're like, yes, sure enough, I am. And they're like, you are not. And eventually one of them went, all right. If you're black, let's hear your rap. I was driving in the other car just laughing maniacally. And I'm racist, you know.
I was just telling Brian, and this is a story. I'm not sure if you know this story, but my old assistant, Jenny, at the show, I had an assistant named Jenny, and she'd get confused easily. But I was dealing with we're having that kind of telethon or a charity event for Brian, and I wanted to donate a lot of stuff to this event, sporting memorabilia that I had and a lot of stuff. And also there was a man who worked for a health insurance company that had helped get my Uncle Frank's health insurance approved. Now, he didn't do anything particularly special, but I got him on the phone because they were dragging their feet and it wound up speeding up the process. So I wanted to send him a hat and a T-shirt. And I wanted to give Brian what was probably around $10,000 worth of sports memorabilia.
Right.
Magic Johnson's Michigan jersey from college. I mean, a lot of great stuff. This guy calls and goes, I don't know what to say. I am overwhelmed. This is your kindness. And I'm thinking, okay, yeah. No, well, in my pleasure, I sent the guy a hat, a T-shirt.
Right.
But I thought, well, maybe he doesn't get anything. Needless to say, he got all of that stuff, and Brian's auction got the hat and the T-shirt. Sorry, Brian.
Jimmy says to me, do you know the story about all this? I'm like, nope, never heard that.
It was bad, yeah.
10 grand light in the pockets. We have some calls for Jimmy. Someone wants to know about your days over at Fox doing the NFL. Mario from Minnesota, 46.
Jimmy.
Hey, Mario. How you doing?
Hey, I feel like it was only yesterday that you were just this pathetic little patsy trying to make the most of your appearance on, Fox NFL Sunday. And I saw the potential. I really did. But do you ever just sort of question why it is you're where you're at?
This is a weird combination of – it's a weird cocktail of insults and compliments.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not a total compliment.
It's not a total compliment. I assure you.
It's about 61%.
Pathetic little patsy.
But that's who you were.
Patsy is a compliment?
But all right, well,
but I wasn't that.
Let's talk about this, Jimmy. Yeah.
Yeah. Who screens these calls?
I don't think – it's a weird thing. Do you feel like you've gotten funnier – or smarter?
No.
Or have you worked on, is it more just reps and arrangement? Have you became a better student of the game? Are you funnier now than you were when you were 25 or whatever?
Well, you don't play the game. The game plays you. You know that.
Yeah, I do know that.
And no, I don't think. I think it's just I'm doing a different thing. I mean, I'm pretty good with disposable comedy, and that's exactly what we do at the show every day. It's whatever's in the news that day, and I can be funny off the cuff, and I can prepare things that are funny, and it's really just what I did on the radio. It's the same thing.
Do you want to? I was actually thinking about interviewing Jimmy Kimmel, and I was like thinking. I think I'm sort of glad that things didn't go my way all the time, because it sort of forced me to write some books and it forced me to go out and do some stand-up and do some shit that I just wouldn't have done.
Right.
And then I think, well, Jimmy's a super funny guy who's done a whole bunch of different things. Do you want to write a book? do you want to produce a movie? Do you want to?
Do you want Mike August to book you into some place in Poughkeepsie?
Would you like?
I like to go on the road with Mike. That's
the great. By the way, think about your answer for a second, and I can tell you the greatest, the bends, the decompression. Jimmy bought at an auction charity thing, like one of those 3 days or 4 days at the villa in Cancun deals.
Cabo.
It's like that thing. You and Jennifer Aniston are hanging out in like one of those places, getting a massage during the day. You get your own beachfront. Everyone sits by the infinity pool and drinks margaritas. Like
there's a butler.
There's a butler and a, you know, and there's a screening room with a big, you know, 10-foot, 12-foot screen. You watch movies at night. And it's just, it's the greatest. It's the greatest thing ever. Jimmy had this thing booked from like, you know, Thursday to Sunday or whatever the, whatever it was. Or actually, and I think about it, it was probably like Sunday to Wednesday or something during vacation time. And Jimmy was gracious enough to invite me and Lynette. And we went down there and it was great, beautiful blue seas, daiquiris, margaritas, the whole nine yards, massages. And I had to leave one day early because I was doing two gigs in Addison, Texas, at the Ha Ha Hole upstairs at a strip mall. And like, I'm not talking about Dallas, Texas. I'm talking about Addison, which I didn't even know where Addison is. And it's a like shitty little club staying at the Red Roof Inn. I remember drinking red wine out of a plastic cup. Always a bad sign. Always a bad sign when the TV runs the same direction as the bed. When you have to lie weird on the bed to watch it. TV's not where your feet are. Yeah. You have to turn your body around and pull the pillows aside so you can watch the TV. TV's deeper than it is wide, even in 2011 back then. But I went from on the beach, Cancun, to Addison, Texas like that, and it was it just made me that much more miserable.
You know when you left Mexico and it's a major step down that something bad is
weeping as I'm going through the airport in Mexico.
I think you only were in Mexico for one day. I think you had to leave like two or 3 days early.
So yeah, do you want to do all those glamorous things one day?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I get enough time with Mike August, believe me.
Yeah, I know. But do you? Oh, there it is. It's the
improv comedy.
Yeah, it's upstairs. It was just never a good sign in the comedy world. And it was a little room anyway. So a book, a movie, anything of that nature.
No, I don't think I might write a book one day, but I think you've covered pretty much all of it in your books. I don't think I really need to write. But I may just come up with a new cover and use yours.
And any other like producing any TV shows, you know, Worldwide Pants style?
Not really.
Good. Fuck it. You're busy enough. You make enough money. Fuck it. Yeah. Yes, Brad.
I have a question about Jimmy's career. How did you go from morning show sidekick to you were hosting a game show on Comedy Central, Ben Stein?
I was the sports guy on K-Rock, and people, some producers heard me on the radio and asked me to come audition for that spot, and I did, and they hired me.
Here's a hard-hitting question from Sarah in Los Angeles, 37. Sarah? Different Sarah? Did I just hit her? Sarah, are you there? It's a question I've always asked myself. Huh. Sarah? Says, how does Adam feel when Jimmy is confused by how bad Adam's family is?
Yeah, I get mad about it. I don't feel confused by it. It angers me. It's crazy.
We do have crazy polar opposite families in terms of involvement.
Yes.
I mean, your family is much more involved than the average family.
My family is more involved with you than most families are with their own children.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Your mom and dad know much more about me than my mom and dad know about me. If you could sit down and do a little quiz show.
This would be a fun thing to do, by the way.
Fun for your family. Very painful, humiliating for my own.
You might as well. They should be punished.
Sarah? I guess. Oh, there you are.
Hello?
Yes. Your question is? I basically asked it already.
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so I had a question along those lines. So I kind of have probably the same family background more as Adam than Jimmy.
And yeah, but you don't do anything cool, so you never know it.
So my question is, is I never realized kind of how bad it was till my therapist would be the, oh, sweetie, oh, wow. You know, so I wonder, Adam, do you ever have those moments when Jimmy looks at you or his family looks at you and are like, oh, wow, really? Okay.
I love Jimmy's family. You know, it's weird because I look at Jimmy's family as, you know, Jimmy has, you probably have a certain amount of baggage with your family that's hard to escape, that,
of course, yeah,
that everyone has with their family. Yeah. And for me, it's like a puppy, but I don't have to clean up their shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I see him on the holidays. I see him at the Feast of San Gennaro. I see him when they're in a good mood. They don't hit me up for money.
Yeah.
And we can hang out and just have a drink together. And then I leave. We never have the.
Well, even if you spent a great deal of time with them, you wouldn't have that because they're just something. I don't know what it is. And I think about it a lot because I think it happens to everyone. There's something about the relationship between the parent and the child that it's almost like. They can make you crazy so much more quickly than anyone else can. They get right to it.
It's stuff that no one else would even understand why it hits you that way.
Because there's so much subtext to everything.
Right.
And they also represent you and in a way, and you know, both like physically represent you. I mean, you see your dad going off on a boring tangent and you recognize that in yourself and you go, okay, what I'm going to do is correct that in him, and that way it won't happen to me when I am his age.
And I think when you react to something that your parents do, when you're triggered, you're reacting not as the age you are now, but the age you are now and every age you've been.
Yeah. Well, you look back at things when you couldn't stand up for yourself or you didn't have the capacity to stand up for yourself. But my mother, it's a typical Italian thing, but she's a force feeder. And it's crazy. It doesn't matter what's happening, what the circumstances are. I mean, she made 5 different cakes, and we were headed to a charity event at which you go around to each chef's stand, and we were excited about it and told them about it. And she forced my fiance to eat 5 slices of cake before this event.
Yeah.
5 slices of cake.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
5 slices of
now,
fucking cake.
Now, for me, that would have been a novelty for my mom, and then I would have found it interesting, amusing, and adorable because it's the polar opposite of what my mom would do. But for you, history, familiarity with your mom, somewhere around the 4th piece of cake,
you start going like, "What's happening here? Why is this? You know, is this some sort of weird power thing?
Right?
Why am I going along with it?" And then I explode, and then it's like, "Whoa, you're being a maniac!"
Yeah, you know?
And I am being a maniac, but there's 45 years of mania that's leading up to me being a maniac.
How much better in terms of mania and maniac? You're getting married soon. How much better a husband do you think you'll be now versus a 19 or 21-year-old Jimmy Kimmel?
Oh, I think I hope I'm better.
You have to be, right?
Yeah, I'd have to be. Or I mean, I was, you know, I was a kid. I didn't know what I was doing. I was half husband, half hostage.
Right.
So
I was a husband.
When I met Jimmy's ex-wife Gina. Was at the Bleed on Reseda,
the boxing match
boxing
that Adam
match.
Trained me for.
Right, it was at the what the hell was that place called?
Yeah, it had a very plain name.
Yeah, no, it was the Reseda. Oh, I'll think of it.
Country Club.
Country
Reseda.
Club. Yeah, I think it's where they filmed Boogie Nights. I think it's where Mark Wahlberg worked on Boogie Nights. If you look at the exterior and you do the whole thing, we'll figure it out. But it was a famous place. It's been there for a million years. And they used to have fights and rock concerts there and stuff like that. But when I first met Jimmy's ex-wife, I went up to her like in my boxing trainer mode. And it's a country club. Yeah. Now there's a picture of it.
Yeah.
And if you look at the exteriors of Boogie Nights when they're like walking outside after Mark Wahlberg finishes the shift and Burt Reynolds there and stuff like that, I swear to God, it's the same place. And it makes sense. It was all in the valley and porn and everything like that. But I went up to Gina and I just said, I was trying to be professional.
Meanwhile, he sent me in without my mouth guard.
Second round. I said, listen, we're talking, telling jokes, drinking Snapple. It was great because I didn't want to train Jimmy and Jimmy didn't want to train. So we just sat
it worked
down,
out perfectly.
Drank Snapple. Yeah. So I said to there she is. And I said, hey, listen, I just want you to understand that this is perfectly safe. 16-ounce gloves, wearing headgear. He's going to be fine. And she looked at me and she said, I hope that guy kicks his ass. I went, wow, I'm not prepared for that. I was thinking she was going to come up to me and go, I'm concerned of what's going on here. Like, yeah. This has gone beyond a joke here. But she was like, I hope he gets killed.
Yeah.
How much longer were you married?
We had
that?
A Ralph and Alice type relationship. Quite a while.
I used to call up Jimmy's house and she'd pick up the phone and I'd go, hey, is Jimmy there? And she'd go, yeah. And I'd go, can you go get him? And she'd go, can you just call back? And I won't pick up this time. I'd be like, or you can just go get him. Just call back.
Yep. That's all true.
Yeah. But I don't know many guys who are – it is the country club from Boogie Nights, by the way.
Oh, wow.
I just don't think guys are wired for marriage even pre-30. Forget pre-25.
Yeah.
Like it's a sad thing. Women, Lynette, Molly, take this in the spirit in which it's intended. But it's that sort of thing where you make your peace with God. You're done with, you know.
So you're just sliding towards death around the time you figure out you're okay
with
marriage.
You don't want to die, per se.
Daddy, stop talking.
But what you do, it's the same time. It's like when somebody cuts, if somebody cuts you off and you're willing to get out of your car, and like bang on that guy's window or scrap, you're not ready for marriage. That same gene that gets you out of the car will get you into trouble in the bedroom as well, so, or the kitchen or the entry hall. When you lose that, when you have that thing, it's when you stop producing testosterone and start producing estrogen and you sort of stop caring just a little bit and the guy cuts you off and you go, let him cut me off. We'll get to the theater 20 seconds later. That's when you're ready for marriage. When you've stopped caring.
Uh-oh.
Daddy, thank you. Stop talking.
We may have a problem then, because I'm not quite there yet.
All right. No, but hope, God willing.
Yeah, God willing. Yeah. As hair migrates from my head to my back.
That's right. God willing, soon. All right. Let's do some news with Allison Rosen.
The news with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison. Allison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with Zip It Cunt. It's Allison. Allison.
So in a very small ceremony, Obama was officially sworn in for his second term on Sunday because the Constitution mandates that that has to happen on January 20th. It does not normally fall on a Sunday. But on Monday, there will be a big public ceremony.
Even during the playoffs?
I mean, when there's playoff games? Yeah.
Someone's got to amend that Constitution. Yeah. I says Sunday, right. Fine. Sunday, NFL Sunday.
I know.
We got an issue there.
It's fucked up.
I feel like I get
Why did
Americans
our forefathers not?
They should have anticipated large black men running into each other. How confused would they
I
be
feel like
about
that? In a way, they did.
I like to show our forefathers the New England Patriots. What? These Negroes are so large. Who let them out?
A Fox 5 anchor was talking about the inauguration and had an unfortunate slip of the tongue.
No.
Oh, no.
Very much 7:48 on this Thursday morning. Coming up next, the most expensive way to celebrate the president's second term. Good morning, Holly.
Is there any other way that you would want to celebrate it? Hey, listen, we are live this morning at the Willard Intercontinental Hotel. It's been a key inaugural spot for 150 years.
Yeah, that's a tough word.
Yeah.
They need to come up with a better word than that.
Yeah. The first time I heard it, I thought, oh, it's so obvious that, you know, it was a slip of the tongue. But then I thought, that's still pretty embarrassing.
No, but the slip of the tongue has to start with a slip of the brain that happened earlier that morning.
Yeah, don't say this. Don't say this, probably.
Yeah, you have to say it. And it's right up there with don't get a boner.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain things where don't do this never leads to.
Does that happen if you tell yourself not to get a boner?
Oh, you'll instantly have a boner.
You'll have a boner instantly.
Yeah.
For your whole life? Or just around the age where you're not supposed to get married.
Oh, you mean a boner for your whole life? No, it goes down eventually.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but I mean, like, can a 65-year-old be like, don't get a boner? Boing.
I don't know. I will tell you.
Here's the thing about here's the thing about the boner. The 65-year-old with erectile difficulty can't say don't get a boner. That's not how it works. But if you're 15 and you're in your underpants and you're waiting for your physical because you want to play high school football and you say don't get a boner, pow, boner. So the reason we hold the slip of the tongue to people, because you go, oh, that was just a slip of the tongue, but had to have a slip of the brain at some point before the slip of the tongue. Mm-hmm. They had to be thinking that. All right. Funny.
Duff Goldman, better known as Ace of Cakes.
Uh-huh.
You know, he makes the crazy
Jimmy's mom hangs with that guy.
My mom's makes cakes, yeah.
Yeah, they make cakes. They
talk cakes. She doesn't know him, though. What'd he do?
He's making the inaugural cake.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was arrested for something weird or something.
Right. I wish.
Yeah.
Because he irritates me, even though I'm sure he's a lovely guy. Mm. But I just wanted to know, Adam, how do you feel about all the crazy cakes?
I didn't know when the tournament entered the kitchen. Like, I feel like that's a place I don't want people doing battle.
I think the Iron Chef started it.
He started it, and now people are literally getting in each other's grill about cooking.
Cake throwdown.
I don't want people throwing down over my pie, because I also feel like, too, when people get angry, they spit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They become agitated. Right. Like, you know, they get people like, fuck you.
Spit goes hand in hand with passion.
And next thing you know, there's shit all over my Denver omelet. I want a nice, like, I want Enya playing and guys very quietly walking around in slippers, being nice to each other with full beard and hair nets on.
Yeah. All we see on TV are really angry people who are cooking.
Yeah. Putting in a room in a place with flames and knives and agitating them, not smart. I like the craftsmanship in it. I don't like that every guy has the weird goatee and the aggressive piercing and the I was born to bake tattoo. On
you have to when you make cakes like that for a living.
Is it because cooking is sort of classically female that they have to be like I'm
baking
really
is even more so? Yeah.
I don't. But when did everything come with attitude? Like, I do understand energy drinks can't have a picture of a guy on a donkey asleep. You know, like that wouldn't be a good label for an energy drink. Although it would be like, see how confident we are? Sleeping donkey energy
it's
drink.
It's called Siesta.
Yeah. Think how confident. It's like the Smucker's commercial. But why does everything have to be like so fucking
it's
juiced up and in your face?
Fietization.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you're making wedding cakes, you know, we have to I guess you have to make it clear that I'm not to be fucked with.
No, yeah, because people think they can take you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
It's like being in prison.
Right.
You mean like they think you're a cream puff because you make cream puffs?
Right. That's exactly.
Yes.
Barbara Walters was hospitalized because she fell on the stairs of the British ambassador's residence on Saturday night. This is in D.C. She was there.
What time was it? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
I know. Scandal. Did you feel a chill? Because it was that time.
Why was she at the British ambassador's in the middle of the night? It's very suspicious.
It sounds, but it's
descending the staircase of shame.
It's a perfect place for her to fall, though, right?
Yeah.
It makes me suspicious even. It's so perfect.
Right, but if somebody
said.
What
are you suggesting?
She was leaving an Olive Garden in Montana. You'd be like, what? But this sounds like where she should fall, right?
Yeah, where you'd expect Barbara Walters would fall.
It's perfect. Like when you hear her, like, what? She fell where? Oh. Okay.
Right.
That makes sense.
Right.
At what age does you falling become news?
Mm.
Yeah, because she's 83. It should be news if she doesn't fall.
That's true.
Yeah, but if like, you know, if like Elizabeth, what's her name on that show fell, we wouldn't know about it.
Hasselbeck
wouldn't know because she's too young. But I think 70 is the age at which it becomes a news item when you fall.
Which is, and she's hospitalized.
Oh, hospitalized as well.
Yeah, I think
think you're automatically hospitalized when you're 83 and you fall.
Yeah.
I think you automatically break something.
Probably.
She was going to be on the news on Monday, but she's not going to be now because of the hospitalization in the fall.
It's weird when you break, in a weird way, when you get old, breaking stuff is a bigger deal and not so big a deal. You know what I mean? Like when you're 13 and you break your wrist, it's kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. Like you had to do something good, like snowboarding or something. Yeah. Now you're getting out of the bathtub or petting your cat.
And at what age do all your friends stop signing your cast?
I think they stopped since they started going to the fiberglass cast.
No, they still do this.
Oh, they sign that?
Yeah. They go even further. They have stickers and all sorts of things that go on the cast.
They have waterproof ones now. Uh-huh. They have like purple day glow ones now. Yeah.
Yeah. It ruined everything.
Yeah. It used to be just that weird plaster, and then it would just smell like fucking hell. And then you could do a a coat hanger. Remember when coat hangers used to be used for almost anything except for hanging coats, like antennas and breaking into cars and it just fucking everything? And undo the coat hanger and slide it down into
it's
that?
It's still the first place I go. And, you know, when you throw those dry cleaning things away, I mean, if you need to get something out of something, you go right to the coat hanger. By the way, I just remembered my grandfather. We bought one set of luggage in like 1940, and then we had that set of luggage well through the 90s until I finally replaced everyone's luggage. But my grandfather, the luggage was bursting open, used plaster to seal the luggage.
Wow.
Plaster.
His grandfather was a crafty, gentle soul with huge hands.
And a lot of bad ideas.
Who fell into a coffin in 2000, right? Is that the last time he fell? That is ultimately your last fall.
Oh, did he break the plaster open once he reached his destination?
Yeah.
Did he have to saw it open?
Oh, no, it didn't. It crumbled immediately upon loading it on the plane. But for some reason, he thought that would be – he probably had no duct tape, and he did have plaster. And he plastered the luggage shut.
Great guy with a great grip. Just huge old man, grippy hands. At some point – in your life, you have what you call like a variable speed on your hand, which is like there's the handshake for the little boy, and then there's the handshake for when you meet Howie Long. They're different handshakes. At a certain point, you get old and you have one handshake. It's I will crush every bone in your arm.
Yes, we talked about that because my landlord, who's 83, is stronger than I am, but it's in the arms.
But it's just that one handshake, and it's little boys, Howie Long, same handshake. Do not have a variable speed. I have an on and off speed on my hand.
Well, my grandfather, his brother was a policeman, and his fingers were so big they could not fit through the trigger. They had to make him a custom gun because he couldn't get his index finger through the trigger of the gun.
Wow.
Imagine if he went bowling.
That'd be rough on his old lady.
So, another news story about people in the news. Katie Couric will get the first televised interview with Manti Te'o.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I would get that.
Yeah.
Turns out you won't. That. But you know who else won't get it? Oprah.
Mm-mm.
I bet she's bummed.
Oh, she's got to be beside herself. Mm-hmm. He's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
I can't.
What's your theory on that? What do you think happened? Because I have a theory.
My game is always stupid or liar. Like,
I think it's both.
It's both.
I think he was tricked at first.
Right.
He believed it and then was too embarrassed to change the story and decided and got in deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's just my guess.
It's pretty. I think it's pretty easy for almost any of us to do, though, if somebody said, hey, man, you know, and pointed at you and said, this guy's a war hero, three tours in NAMM and two Purple Hearts. And your first impulse, you have a minute. It's sort of like when somebody calls you by the wrong name.
Yeah.
You can either correct it right there or go through the rest of the party answering to Gerald.
Anthony Jeselnik came up to me after our show at Amalfi and went, Andrea. And I said, with like a force that frightened me, I said, Allison.
Yeah, but at least you did it.
Yeah, but I felt bad after. I think he flinched.
But
I flinched.
If you walk away, once you don't correct the person who calls you, it sets, and then you have to re-break those bones, and nobody wants to do that. Because
I would have to change my name.
It becomes weird, and then we get mad at the person for lying, except for really they just kind of backed into something, and then they couldn't stop it.
Yeah. Terry Bradshaw called me Billy, and Lou Ferrigno, after appearing on my show multiple times, called me Brian.
Did you correct him or just go with it?
I laughed hysterically and did not correct him. Yeah, well, it was more like Brian.
Right.
Manti Te'o told ESPN, because they got an interview with him, but it was off camera, that he lied to his dad and said that he met Lene Kakua in person, and then he had to tailor his story because he had lied to his dad. That's what he's claiming.
That sounds about right.
But it is one of these I always like these stories.
I like to hear a good-looking football player in this situation because it's so unusual.
Right.
I mean, you know, you'd expect this of like the kid in the marching band at Notre Dame, but you think he probably has 1,000 girls throwing themselves at him. And the idea that he, you know, my first thought was, oh, maybe maybe he's gay. And
he's
this
gay.
Is a cover up thing.
That is a rumor that is out there.
I started that.
good work.
But if that was the case, I was thinking I would come out of the closet whether I was gay or not. If I was him, that would be my move. I'd say, listen, you know what? It's a difficult environment. Being on a football team, there's a lot of ignorance, misunderstanding, and I was nervous about it, so I made up this story. I think if that happened, he would be hailed as a hero, and yeah, he'd have to live with guys for the rest of his life. But I think it's a small price to pay.
I think you're right.
First off, I always like these news stories because it is, well, we don't have any problems. News stories like we have as much food, as much clean water, and we're safe as we need to be from a terrorist attack. Like when we consume ourselves for days on nothing.
Yeah.
This guy's a high school college football player who made a girlfriend. There's no didn't affect you or I. It's not like, oh, fuck, you just jeopardized my children's future because of this lie or anything like that. That means we have a society that really is out of problems and we're looking for ways to distract ourselves.
Right.
Like when you're, you know, like you ever have to spend any real time at a place like the, at Firestone Tire and you find yourself looking at a magazine called like snow tires and such. And you go, that's nonsense. And then 20 minutes later, you're reading it feverishly. Like,
you flip to where the article jumps and the page isn't there. And you're like, God damn it.
Yeah, someone tore a page out. And you're like, because you have nothing. Yeah. There's just nothing. And you will do something in this vacuum of nothing. And so obviously, we don't have much going on. I mean, there's no big wars and there's no cholera
also,
and things like
that.
It's
also big because the media outlets that didn't report that story enjoy reporting because they could rub it into the ones that did do that, the heartwarming, story about the football player. And the media outlets that did report the story want to kind of make it his fault instead of theirs.
Right. Oh, that's a good point.
The thing is that there are all these, like Malcolm Gladwell is one of them, who just want to talk about what this means and the overtones and why it has captivated us. And they claim – or he claims not to care about whether Manti Te'o was involved or not. And like I am singularly I'm obsessed with just how much did he know? At what point did he know? Was he a victim? Was he part of it? That's all I care about.
Yeah. Well, my feeling is if he was gay and he took a shining to you, there's nothing you could do about it. That's the way I think. Like, he could make you gay too pretty easily, pretty quickly.
And lying to a father. Keep in mind, this is a man who named his son Manti.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, there's got to be something going on there too.
Right.
Yeah. Manti. Yeah. Never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a wrestling
BDSM
move.
BDSM kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Very homoerotic.
Yeah.
Sure,
which kind of ties do you want, the zip or the man?
Tie. Yeah.
Man tie.
There's a library in Australia that is
No, there isn't.
You're right.
I've been to Australia, so no libraries there.
Did you go to Manly, Australia? Truly, that
I
is
did,
the name
yes.
Of the place.
I went to Manly.
You didn't find
Manly
the
Beach.
Library?
No, I did not see a library, so
well,
I'm dubious about this
It's a
story.
Suburb of Sydney.
Okay, yes. I've been there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there is a library.
Okay. All right.
And
I'll take your word for it.
They are moving all their Lance Armstrong books to the fiction section.
Oh, that's funny.
See, there's a sign.
But obviously, ironically, they're trying to get some ink.
Yeah, well, it worked.
Right. So we're talking about it.
I wonder if in Australia the library is populated only by homeless people surfing the internet.
That's what it's populated by here.
Yeah, or if that's specific to the United States. But it might be that there, too, now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't seem like huge readers to me.
And are they huge Lance Armstrong fans?
I don't, I know everyone hates Lance Armstrong and everyone thinks he's a bully and all that kind of stuff. But I never, cycling is not, like, almost not a sport. It really isn't. And no one gave a shit. And now we give a shit. And at least we're talking about it. I mean, at least there might be some kid who wants to be a cyclist now because it never leaves the news. Whereas when I was growing up, there was no such thing as the Tour de France was some kind of weird, bizarre. I thought they had baguettes in their baskets and rode around with berets on. Like, I didn't know what we have, like doing their little bell sound and stuff. Like I never even heard of it. And now at least we're talking about it. And as far as the Australian library goes, I think they're trying. This is a publicity move. But if you have a library, what do you want publicity for? Like my whole thing.
Really.
If I was a librarian, every time someone walked in, I'd be like, sorry, we're closed, or we're I'd just make up shit. Like we're
just
buffing.
Go, really?
We're buffing the floor. So,
it's 10 in the morning.
But you'd whisper it.
Yeah, I'd whisper.
And then
you
do a really loud shh.
Yeah, Because what do you want people coming in and fucking around with the newspaper?
Messing
for?
Things up.
That's right.
Yeah.
You had a good thing going.
Pulling cards out of your card catalog.
Oh, the Dewey
fucking
Decimal
with,
System.
Yeah, I don't fuck with Dewey. Here's the thing, though. Lance Armstrong's mea culpa struck me, and I think most people who saw it, as so insincere. And I'm thinking, if I'm trying to remember if I've ever seen a televised apology or something that's televised where someone's admitting something where they actually seemed remorseful.
Well, there's a couple of things. If you're going to sit on the same seat times a 113-mile leg of a bike race, like you have to sit and pedal and let your brain go free of all thoughts for like 7-8 hours at a time. You're more robot than you are human being. I mean, he is more Drago than he is Rocky. You know what I mean? In terms of like his personality, he probably doesn't have a ton of personality because you can't see like Jimmy when you exercise, when you're working out. No, but you get about 7 minutes in your workout and go, oh, fuck, I'm going out of my mind.
Not even.
I see those women fucking running on a treadmill for like an hour and 20 minutes. Like, what are you doing? I'm going insane. Yeah. Like, I got to be doing something at this point.
I stare at the timer and then I'll fiddle with it and see how many calories, how far I've gone.
Right. Right. So, and Jimmy even has that super crazy workout machine that says
the 4 minute workout machine. I can't carve that 4 minutes out
even
of my day.
Even 4 minutes is too lofty a goal for him and his abs. I mean, so if somebody said, sit on this stationary bike, you know, when it's in Colorado and it's snowing outside and just ride the bejesus out of it for 7 hours, you would go insane if you had a personality. And if you have, if you're wired, and I do believe it's much harder for guys like Jimmy, whose mind is sort of turned on all the time, to do super repetitive motion
stuff.
Are you
equating personality with conscience? Like, do you think he's a sociopath?
A little of that meets I don't know how to express myself because I'm capable of killing myself on this bicycle for 7 hours at a time, and thus I've lost. Now, you take the heavy set woman of color. Not so good on the stationary bike.
But great with articulation.
Take me, God, tears flying out, you know what I mean? Sweet Jesus.
Do you think also there's some part of him that just wants to say, guess what? Everyone else was using those performance-enhancing drugs also.
And yeah, like so, why are we going through this charade of pretending we care?
That everyone else was clean and I beat them because no, he beat them and they were all also using that particular drug.
Yeah.
He just did it better.
Got caught.
Yeah. I completely concur.
Thank you.
All right, last story.
Well, this is pretty big news, you guys. Hooters is getting a redesign.
I think that's a mistake.
They're getting a boob job.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Go ahead.
Hooters.
Hooters, yeah.
Big deal.
I think we have some photos of
the
new redesign. Yeah, they're changing the look. Now, I have never been to a Hooters, so I can't comment. I haven't.
Really?
I've hardly lived. Yeah, I haven't.
Doesn't it look the same except –
well,
there are no stools in the other picture.
So, yeah. And you can go to adamcarolla.com to see these photos. On the left is the old Hooters, I guess, which has a surfboard. And on the right is the new Hooters, which doesn't. And also there's a lot more wood paneling. It's a little more sleek. And it's got that sort of exposed stuff on the ceiling.
The old one,
Chipotle inspired.
The old one looked like if Jimmy Buffett was a plumber. And he had a van.
Yes.
That's what it would look like. I always feel like the surfboard is a sort of cop-out for a bar.
Me too. Like,
isn't that it
doesn't scream owls or breasts.
Yeah, the surfboard is just – no one's got a beef with a surfboard. No one can complain about a surfboard. It takes up a lot of room.
Yeah.
What does it signify? Just beers and kicking back?
Yeah. It's like
– hanging loose.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that everyone sort of wishes they could do, or whoever does it is automatically cool. Like it's the surfboard, it's as far as you can get from a swastika, which when I open a bar, I'm going to shake up the bar world with. But it's as far away from that as you get. It's the, you know what I mean? Hang back.
Yeah.
Shorts
when I was,
are cool.
When I
flip-flops.
Was a kid growing up in Orange County, my dream when I was 16 was to have a white cabriolet with a surfer boyfriend and his surfboard sticking out the back.
Yeah.
Can you think of anything that's less me than any of that?
No.
Yeah.
No. I
still time. It's still time.
I remember when we started K-Rock, Bean used to drive a red Cabriolet.
Yeah, 6 foot seven.
VW.
So it's a manly vehicle.
Yeah. Oh, there's a picture of us at,
at Hooters. Yeah.
At Hooters. Yeah.
Who's between you guys?
Kevin and Bean.
That's Kevin and Bean and the Hooters girls and Jimmy, and I'm wearing a high society shirt.
Yeah, classy.
Their boobs are upstaged by their perms.
Why were we there? I don't know what was going on there.
We were either doing a calendar signing. Remember we do the calendar signings?
Yeah. At a Hooters, though?
Or we're doing a Christmas, one of those Christmas cassettes. By the way, Christmas time in the LBC came on. On Christmas Day, I just hit my iPod like all through the house, you know, which, by the way, I always have the speakers outside turned up too loud and I forget that the outside ones are pumped up too loud.
Yeah, that can be bad.
Yeah, my placard says Bertram. See if we can find Christmas time in the LBC. It always cracks me up. Jimmy is doing Snoop.
This
right?
is when Snoop Dogg first kind of came out.
Right.
Hit the scene. And I used to imitate him by only saying, know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
But I think we can play some of it. But what was the one where you were talking of? What was the Christmas one? It always made me laugh when you were talking about chestnuts roasting on the open fire, jack off nipping at your nose.
Oh, that was Karl Malone, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Jack off nipping.
Jimmy, do you only do black people?
I prefer them, yes.
D-O-G with some shit about the baby double G-O-D.
Yeah.
Back in the day in the Bentley hood, that shit was all good. You know this family was holy moly. The Virgin Mary was roly poly.
Three wise motherfuckers all they way.
Bringing gifts and shit for baby poo in the hay.
Well, there was danger, niggas in the manger.
The evil king was on they ass. They packed their shit and got the fuck out fast. Yeah.
Little J was okay.
So now my homie Dr. Dre and me, we celebrate that day.
Christmas time in the LBC.
That's Cleto, right?
Yeah, that's Cleto.
A fat nigga in a sleigh giving shits away.
Shits away.
Christmas time.
I was laughing my ass off in my underpants on Christmas Day with my kids.
It's just great for the children to hear.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. I told that motherfucker Santa bring a pick for my afro. And here's the rest on my Christmas list. I want a black motherfucking Lexus.
What are you talking about?
And for my homies down the way, I say bring a gang of Tinkerbell.
Bring that shit for Dr. Dre.
Me and my niggas down in LBC. We'll smoke that motherfucking Christmas tree. Silent night.
It's a fucking good song, and it was produced like by cutting tape and stuff, right?
Yeah.
We gotta hear the whole thing. I'm sorry.
It's what?
Christmas time in the LBC.
Cleto and the Cletones.
Christmas time in the LBC.
It's Christmas, the hands with the double G. Deck the hall and nibble on my jingle ball.
Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown.
Snoop taking Lucy down a coochie tank.
The weather outside was frightful.
But on my dick, you're so delightful. I got my nuts on your chest where they raise. Want some eggnog, bitch? This niggas taste the best. It's sweet like a motherfucking candy cane. Snoop Dogg hanging low.
With a Jimmy like a great thing.
Ho, ho, motherfucking ho. Get on your knees, bitch, now I'll show you where this goes.
Yeah, put your chin in the motherfucker.
Oh, my kids love this song.
I stick my Utah dog in your ass. And then we dress up nice and go to Midnight Mass. Yeah.
Christmas time.
All right, you get the picture. I fucking love this song. You know, it's funny because some of the stuff you did in the past, I don't know if you're like me, but there's stuff I've done in the past where I just kind of brush off like a hairdo. Yeah, not me. My hair's kind of been the same, but that embarrassing picture of you and
this beard thing
in '89. This could be something I could look back on and be embarrassed by. Right. Thank you. Fire. Point is, you look back and you go, and this work, like comedically, you don't want to hear the shit you're coming up with when you're 19 because probably it's not good. But this is really fucking funny.
That one holds up. Yeah.
That one holds up nicely.
Well, it's a Christmas classic.
It's a classic. All right. Let's bring it home, Allison
That's
Rosen.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen. Zip it, cunts.
That was the news with Allison Rosen.
Ah, yes. Greg Fitzsimmons, Fitzdog coming in here. Dana Gould. Oh, boy. We got to talk Uhlhauser with him. He's going to be destroyed.
Yeah, I'm so sorry, by the way, when I express my condolences in person.
Yeah. I know. It's very sad. Also, Gilbert Gottfried coming in our 1,000th show.
Wow. That'd
be right. Dag Harlan Williams. Brian.
Hey.
Play Dag having sex.
What are the odds you guys have counted these shows correctly?
There's no way. We're probably in the 600 somewhere.
Or it could be like 1,018.
Dag, this is what Dag sounds like having sex.
Yeah, here it is.
Yeah, here it is.
Don't look at me. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Ooh.
I love the oh shit.
I have a little bit of breaking news.
Oh, boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The Baltimore Ravens have defeated the New England Patriots in the AFC Championship.
Is this going to be
Super
breaking
Bowl
tomorrow?
Not
feature
tomorrow.
Feature the San Francisco 49ers versus the Baltimore Ravens on February 3rd. You know, I scroll sports news, so it's important to me.
This shows how busy Adam is that we actually recorded this during the football game.
I am going to be pulverized. I probably should not talk about the fact that I took the Pats to win the Super Bowl. Now fucking Christoph Waltz got
to
come through for me.
He has to.
If he doesn't fucking come through with that Oscar, I'm going to owe Cousin Sal a couple $100. But I will get legitimate shit, I think, from Kevin Hench and Bill Simmons for jinxing them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. Yeah.
Jimmy, tell me if there's hyperbole involved with the retelling of the story. But I was here when you called 2 years ago, maybe to the day, or maybe it was 1 year ago today, and you said, who you like in the Super Bowl? Who you betting on?
Right.
And I said, I'm not betting anymore because I lose. All I do is lose, and I just can't do it anymore. And you said, no, you're betting. And I said, I don't bet. I'm not. I lose. All I do is lose. And he said, you got to pick a team. And I said, I don't want to pick a team. And then I heard Cousin Sal, who was being three-wayed, said, pick a team. And I said, okay, I'll take the Patriots. And then Jimmy said, all right, I'll take the Giants. And we hung up the phone. So don't be – I would not be surprised if Hench and – or Simmons are
there's no question about this is entirely your fault. And good for them.
It's just good science. All right. Allison Rosen is your new best friend. New episode available on iTunes and our app. This week's guest, Harris Whittles. I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. And you can check out more information, AllisonRosen.com. All right. Jimmy Kimmel Live, crushing it in the ratings. Weeknights, 11:35 ABC. I don't know why I'm reading that. I know all that information. And if you want to keep some wind in the sails of the pirate ship, you just click through the Adam Carolla banner. You go to AdamCarolla.com and hit the Adam Carolla app and go to Amazon and click on through and keep the party going, people. 1,000 episodes coming up and all.
Wow.
Because of you people. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Wow. So until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Jimmy Kimmel, Allison Rosen, and Paul Bryan saying mahalo.